Hi, welcome to part two of our show, It's 2 meters You Tit, which is the title of one of Sarah Longhi's wonderful photographs. And she's going to explain how and why that was taken, along with other aspects of her photography and her life. So we hope you enjoy the second half of our show. So tonight's topic is obviously our guest, Sarah. Who's been adding to our discussions earlier on in the show, which is great. Thank you for that, Sarah. But now we want to find out a bit more about you, your photography. You very kindly sent me some photographs that you have taken, which you think shows what you do and why you like photography. So, Sarah, you're based down in Surrey, you were saying.
I am. I'm not far from Woking, which is now full of great big towers. But I'm also right on the edges of beautiful Surrey heathland that is nationally and internationally important, and RHS Wisley, which is a little bolt hole of mine.
Great. You mentioned earlier on about how you got into photography with your first camera. How did the love grow, and what direction did it take you in?
Well, it's one of these things of, you never know what path your life is going to take. And I really couldn't have foreseen mine. And my dad gave me his SLR to use probably first when I was about 14, 15. And I was an art student. Well, I'm studying GCSEs and everything at the time, but my primary areas were art and science. And I wanted to go into veterinary medicine. But I wanted to really work with wildlife and to continue painting and drawing it. That's what I always did. And just a brief moment to say hello to my dad, who's been battling away after a big operation. He's been stuck in hospital for just over 3 weeks now. And I know he's really looking forward to actually being able to see me on screen. So.
Oh dear, I hope that doesn't affect his recovery now. It could have been a bad omen.
He's actually currently on a mixed ward, which he hadn't been expecting. But because of aspects with COVID, the men and the women are all together on the renal unit. I think that gave him a bit of a shock. And then he... spotted that one of the ladies in the room with him looked a little bit like Catherine Tate, Nana. he's getting his sense of humour back, and that's a good sign.
Well, hello, Dad. I hope you enjoy the show, and your daughter's doing a great job with us here.
Yeah, it's all their fault, Mum and Dad. Both of them very heavily into art. Dad became a lawyer, as you do. They encouraged all of us with the arts, all of the creative arts, but also inspired a real love of the outdoors and wildlife and nature. Things took a real turn for me. I was merrily getting along with doing my painting and drawing, and the sciences had fallen away a little bit, but I had visions of going on and becoming an art teacher, and I wanted to go into art therapy. And then I became very, very ill, and nobody knew what was wrong with me. And it eventually turned out 4 years later that I have a condition called Crohn's disease, which is a form of inflammatory bowel disease. And the first few years after my diagnosis were pretty traumatic, including at the time pre-disability discrimination laws, various universities turning around and saying, oh, you've got Crohn's. I mean, you don't get better from that. Panicking and thinking about all their lost revenue from funding. So it wasn't a happy time, but my art was keeping me going. And then I had a number of operations that the trauma of it all set off another condition called fibromyalgia. They are both autoimmune diseases. My immune system thinks that there is just something very, very wrong with me, and it's going to attack every bit of me it can. And over the last sort of 20 years, I've been gradually losing more and more of my dexterity and general mobility. And eventually I couldn't paint or draw anymore. I have altered sensation in my hands and my feet. So I couldn't grip and control pens, pencils, brushes. And I decided after about a year of really being terribly, terribly depressed that I needed to really refine my creativity. And I had a little bit of money that had been left to me when my great aunt passed away. And I bought a Fuji Bridge camera and I started doing a bit of work with a children's theatre company and also engaging with the local music scene, going to live gigs and getting involved in music photography. And it grew from that. I then started finding that through the photography and as I progressed and built up from using bridge and film to then moving on to full DSLR. My first was the Sony, it was the A350. And I started moving up with things and I got more and more into my wildlife and nature photography. And it was reconnecting me with nature in a way that I don't think I'd been as fully connected since I was a child. And that is something that to this day, it gets me through. It is the greatest medicine to me that there could be, even when times are really, really difficult, to be able to go out into the outside and study some wildlife. It could be something completely unexpected, or it could be a bird that you're very used to watching in a particular area. It's pure escapism. They talk about mindfulness an awful lot, and I don't think we need made up words for it or new words for it. It really is about that joy of just connecting with the very simple pleasures in life, the things that we don't have to pay for. It's right there on our doorstep, in our gardens, in the park, down by the canal. And it is precious and priceless. And I want to share it with the world because it's beautiful.
Well, that's true and inspirational. Sarah, to go through that amount of adversity and still come out with that positive attitude, I think shows us all what we need to do sometimes when we're feeling a little bit rough. Damien, you wanted to come in there?
Well, what I want to do is compliment you, Sarah, because when you're on the social media and you're going into the competitions like the West Mondays and that, You inspire lots of people. You take time out to write to everybody. And it's really nice because you make a nice comment about the photographs and you encourage people. And I've noticed that you've got quite a community that you generate around yourself. And a great gift to have, especially in a sort of a sterile world at the social media and that you make it alive. And I you always chat to people. So that's great. And I do like your photographs. I mean, that they are inspiring and how you capture them, and especially those starlings growing up, that was something else. And then some of the human interaction pictures that I've chatted to you about, they're very good as well. And we also have a lot more in common from islands that we visit as well. So it's been a pleasure getting to know you over the last few months and realizing what you get up to. But it's, when you're doing all that you said, I could really feel that you were what you were saying then. But when you start a project in your mind, how do you compose the picture? What do you look for? And what are the tips to make a good photograph? I suppose everybody wants to photograph like you. So what advice would you give to people?
Well, if you're going from, say, a wildlife perspective, a nature perspective, I don't think you can really capture wildlife in an image unless you really know and understand that wildlife. unless you know and understand its habitat, its environment. So you're getting all of those elements together within it to tell a story that isn't just about the subject in front of you. It's about your personal connection to this subject in this place. So, you know, I look back at a lot of my early images of, say, birds and butterflies, and they are really what we might just call a record shot. They're good photographs. There's nothing wrong with the technique and everything within the photograph, but they don't emote, if you know what I mean.
So I'm going to show up your picture of the butterfly here. I'm going to share the screen with everyone to see if I can find the thing now. There we go. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about this image here.
So this was the end of summer last year, and it's at that time where we're looking for those last few butterflies of the year. And butterflies for me have become a real symbol of resilience. I've had a special relationship with them since I was a child. And they seem very fragile when you look at them, but in actual fact, there is such incredible strength. We've destroyed so much of their environment, so much of their habitat, and you know, thanks to a lot of citizen science and a lot of online campaigns and things, we are putting more back into our gardens, but you know, it's a slow process. So whenever I see quite an old tattered butterfly that is coming towards the end of its days, it speaks of real resilience. There's this aspect of nature, there is always change, there is always entropy, and life can be a real battle. But at this moment, I'd been walking through, and yes, I was walking, I wasn't in my wheelchair because I was in a little safe space called Heather Farm, Little Sang. And it was raining and the sun suddenly broke out, and I just caught the glint on its wings. And thank goodness I had my macro with me, and I was able to get down on a level with it. My parents did have to pull me off the ground afterwards. Thanks, Mum and Dad. But because it had been raining, this little butterfly was very cold, so it allowed me to get really close and capture that magic of that the backlight. And it's that beautiful late summer, early autumn light that I just think gives a beautiful golden glow to everything. And you can see within the image, you've got these seed pods, and this is from the wildflowers, and you've just got this one seed. And this is what butterflies are doing for me. They are seeding the future. So everything that comes to an end, that draws to a close, is actually setting in motion new life for the future. And I think that's something that we can all do a little bit of, sowing the seeds.
Neil, your kind of photograph?
It's a beautiful photograph. I can never seem to, I occasionally get them, but I just, they always move too quick for me. I mean, they're not fast moving, but by the time you get down to their level, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah. I think it's the capturing of the light, which is just so brilliant. I can picture exactly the time of year, everything about that picture, just from that, from the light on the pods. It's just, yeah, superb. Yeah,
I love the seed pods in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
Let me just take that back.
Thank you.
Yeah, very clever. The other one I was going to try and show, talk amongst yourselves for a second while I try and find this, was this circling one.
Ah,
here we are. Yes. Yeah. So again, let me see.
My starlings.
Let me see if I can screen share this one. Again, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about that one.
So yes, circling was sort of my my vague title that I had going on in my head when I was putting the composition together. But I ended up, because I did this at the beginning of lockdown, calling it "It's 2 meters, you tit." I'm wondering whether maybe I should redo it a little bit now and put masks on everybody. maybe one with a mask just hanging off and say, "Put your mask on, you tit." But yeah, I am a shielder, one of the shielded. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about who the shielded are. I'm shielded because I have to take a lot of immunosuppression and immunomodulating drugs, including biologicals, for my Crohn's disease. And add that in with asthma, and you've got a bit of a dangerous mix when it comes to any infections that are going around. Winter is normally a bit of a miserable time of year for me, any year, even without a pandemic. So I kind of had an idea of what was going to be happening when we first started going in towards lockdown. I'd already been warned. And I think a lot of people that I know thought I was overreacting. And then it all came out and shielded, you're locked down, you have 3 months, you can't go outside. And I don't even have a private garden. I live in a flat, ground floor flats, and it's adapted for my disabilities. So I couldn't leave this little one bedroom flat at all for over 3 months. And I thought, how am I going to survive without nature? So I basically ordered a new bird feeder and a lot of bird food, and then got my husband to plant the bird feeder in a suitable pot outside our windows, which took a bit of negotiation because we have folding windows, so it only goes up so far before you end up with a bar coming out across it. So I sent him out there, poor man, going left a little bit, back a little bit, close a little bit. he's got such patience. But we finally got it in the right position, and then of course I'm having to send him out every few days to replace the food on it and do the water. But we it was quite nice that we could actually do this together. He was furloughed, and you know, we could open the window up and he'd pass things in to me to be cleaned out, and I'd pass the coconut feeders out for him to put on there, and then we'd get to sit back and watch the show. I've always felt blessed to have moved into a block of flats that has the right kind of tiles on the roof for starlings. One of the reasons they've been in decline has actually been because a lot of building things would change. So the way roofs were done would change. And that's affected not just starlings, but the house martins and swifts. But we have a really good colony here, and they are always really garrulous little characters. And I just thought, well, this is a great way for me to spend my time, not just as a photographer, but the naturalist part of me, and really watch them through that really critical breeding season, and watch how they all interact, how the different aged fledglings are interacting with each other, and watch how they behave with some of the other birds as well. And I've got to say that I think most of the other birds were actually quite nervous of the starlings, because they are quite a loud, raucous gang, and they do get into some big squabbles. But I wanted to show that this whole thing within circling, or it's it's 2 meters, you tip, of the circles of life, of the passage of time, how things all come round in the end, but also this little bit of feeling like I was trapped on a wheel myself at the time. It going into lockdown and being shielded was so similar to the feelings I've had before of when I've known I've got to have another operation, which actually I do have to have another operation. I have no idea when it's going to be. But very often when I've known a big one's coming, there's all this sort of anxiety and you feel like, again, I've got to go through this again. How many times is this going to keep happening? But I think it's just a sort of reflection of everyone has these troubles in life, and mine might seem a little bit major to some people, but it's my mountain that I'm climbing. It doesn't mean that somebody else's mountain isn't anywhere near as challenging. It is. Everyone is on their own journey and it is challenging. And this year has just made things more challenging for more people. And I think people who've never, ever had issues with mental health before have found that they have had some disturbances this year, whether depression, anxiety, sleep problems. But being close to nature, even by doing something as simple as putting up a bird feeder and sticking some coconut shells filled with suet balls on it, it brings that simplicity and that constancy of nature back to you, and it can really light up your day, lift your spirits, and give you so much hope.
Well, that's very true. And unfortunately, you mentioned the word depression there, and I became very depressed when I saw this next photograph. I've been trying to photograph the moon for years. I've never got a decent shot. And then you just turn round very casually and produce this.
Yeah, Martin hasn't got a mountain to climb. He's got the moon to.
Yeah,
to
look. Scale. Yeah. That's the thing, now the moon has become even bigger a climb. Look, what a stunning, stunning photograph.
Problem is, Martin, that's not just one photo you've got to manage. That's what, about 20?
Yeah,
more than. And
how did you plate that?
We had two lunar eclipses, total lunar eclipses in 2015. It was actually the year that Simon and I got married in the island that both Damien and I love, Kos in Greece. In September of that year, we had the more spectacular lunar eclipse. And it was, I think they gave it some crazy name on the media, like they like to do. So it was the super blood harvest moon or something like that. It was visible here in the very early hours of the morning. It was starting around midnight, finishing at about 5 a.m. And so this photo is actually the culmination of one of the most romantic things that my husband has ever done for me. Sit outside on the side of the Surrey Hills at Newlands Corner all night long in the freezing cold. And there were only a couple of other photographers on another part of the hill. And we had a bit of a sing off with the song from a certain film about snow and ice with a cartoon character. And the biggest problem I had was condensation on my lens. Oh my Lord, I hadn't figured in for that. It was constant. Before every single shot, I was having to do so much work wiping off the lens. But it was a bit experimental. I've been photographing the moon a lot. I've always loved the moon. It's appeared in a number of my paintings over the years, and I'd already done a whole series of moon photos showing the full sort of lunar calendar. But this was a personal challenge to try and capture the whole of the blood moon. And it was quite experimental going into it, having a basic idea of what kind of settings I would need. And I had a concept of what I wanted the image to be. I wanted to show this sort of arcing movement, because that's what the moon is doing. A lot of images of moon series, when you see them, they're set up in sort of blocks or across a line or maybe in a diagonal, but I wanted to reflect this wonderful arcing circular movement of the moon. And at that one point, the reason why it's a supermoon is because it is passing us at its closest position. So it appears that much bigger. Of course, when it is fully eclipsed, it really does go incredibly dark. When you're photographing the moon at full brightness, a full moon, you want a really fast shutter speed and quite a low ISO, because it's much brighter than you would think. So to bring out all of that detail, you really need to bring that down. But then as you move into the eclipse, very quickly it got incredibly dark, and I had to really whack the ISO up. So when it came to putting each of the moons together, they were all sort of processed to sort of have the same tonal qualities. Obviously I had to do slightly different aspects with getting the lighting right on every single one. But yeah, it's then a case of sitting there in front of Photoshop and building it up, all the layers, masking out areas of the sky so you're not having bits covering other ones, and working to a template. And my template was the golden spiral Fibonacci sequence. I was sort of going right back to my early days of art school and this sort of link between maths and science, art and nature, and how these patterns form together and can create something so beautiful. And it does draw in the eye, and I think it is that spiral that makes that image of the blood moon work maybe a bit more aesthetically compared to some others. So I'm trying to draw you in, I'm trying to move you with the moon, rather than just showing you a static image of how the moon appears during the eclipse.
What do you think, guys?
Very successful. Yes, I'm captivated. Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Some beautiful detail.
Can't let her back on the show because she's putting us to shame.
I'm so depressed now. I'm so depressed.
Danway, you better take that Instagram post to the moon you just put up, Danway.
Oh, I put a very poor Instagram post.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
I missed that. Honestly, some of my first images with the moon were absolutely appalling, and it really wasn't until I got a really good long telephoto lens and a really good steady tripod and really thought about what brightness is coming from the moon to me at all those different phases. It's just like with wildlife. You've got to learn about your subject. You've really got to know the subject that you're capturing. So yeah, it worked out. It was a long night. There was a lot of tea. There was a lot of cleaning condensation and a lot of bad singing. But it was a beautiful, beautiful night, and I love my husband forever for that and many more things.
Well, I'm constantly being told by my friends that that's a wonderful picture of the sun, and how did I get it so dark in the background? It was, so. We'll have to work on that. Well, Sarah, it's been fascinating listening to your talk there, and I think it is inspirational, and we could get out of bed, my back's out, all feeling a bit bad. I'm not going to go out and take some photographs today. I think it's shown that perseverance and determination that you seem to have in drones is a great factor, and it ties both of the your abilities and your determination and the enjoyment that photography can give to all of us. So thank you.
Yeah, I think
I thoroughly enjoyed listening to your explanation of how you got into photography. How you're ever going to get out of it, I don't know, but it's nice that you're here, and it's wonderful to see these photographs.
I don't think I'm ever going to get out of it.
Good, good. Don't ever do it. I don't. The world would be a sadder place if we lost these photographs.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that, I mean, the Stalin shot for me, I mean, yeah, inspirational to be able to do that, you know, from your home, just goes to show that there are shots to be had. Now, you know, I know some photographers that you know, they weren't shielding, but they were in lockdown and we were restricted by, you know, like the 30-minute exercise walk and everything that was going on at the time. And they pretty much just sort of put a camera bag in the cupboard and just sort of gave up on photography. And I think you've proven that there's always a shot to be had if you want to try. You know, I did try some stuff in lockdown, and I don't know if it's going to come over my shoulder. I was lucky to find some butterflies in a local cemetery. So there are shots to be found. If you
we got into competitions because Dodsey got into, we got into taking pictures of spectrums on bubbles and water drops and oil and water. So there's lots of things you can do. But what I enjoyed about it is how you were so positive. And the mindfulness, and that's such a great thing to give to people. That as you said, to be robust and to ensure that you look at the adversity, take it on head on, and go forward and make something from it. And the resilience you talked about—you're full of resilience, Sarah. That's wonderful.
Yeah, brilliant.
I have a question actually about that Starling and Putin photo. I mean, it's obviously it must be a number of different photos. Because you'll never get the two so close to each other. So is that,
or a
is that
circle?
A single wing up on a bird feeder. It is brilliant. It's really well done. I love the way that the birds appear to be interacting with each other as well.
Well, they do. I mean, the starlings are actually generally they're interacting with each other. But also when the blue tits and the great tits were coming in, they were coming in as pairs because they were nesting as well. So they were interacting with each other. But you can take, you see these different expressions going on, and you see the different personalities. Different personalities really come out in a lot of birds. And you can almost sort of envisage a conversation going on between them. And when I would see the expression on one bird, in one image and another with another one, I could sort of put them together. So it took a bit of whittling down to get the final ones that I was going to use within the shot. But everything there is, there's no borrowed textures or any graphics from anywhere else. I actually took an out of focus image of our sycamore tree in the background. It's a lovely backdrop when it's got the light on it. You get that lovely bokeh effect with the golds and greens. I did use that very much like a texture, like you would drop a sky into a background. But I dropped my birds and the circle I made out of one curved bit of the bird feeder. I took that and then shaped it to fit into a circle and had to do a bit of dodging and burning to get everything matching together and warping here and there. But I really enjoyed the challenge. I enjoy challenges that I can actually get to. I think that's one of the things where it comes into my illness. A lot of the time I have very little control over what is happening with my body. I follow the diet that I have to follow, which is at the moment incredibly restricted in all the wrong ways. I can have loads of bread and loads of cake, but I can't eat a tomato and I miss them. I do all of that and it will still play havoc. And there comes a point, and I think a real turning point in my life was actually accepting where my vulnerabilities were. Okay, that's difficult, or that's painful, or I can't do that by myself anymore. So I need to get some help, or I need to get a wheelchair. I need to have a wheelchair accessible vehicle. None of those things are the disability. it's the impairments I have that cause an issue, and it's the world around me and the society we have formed and how it works that is the disability. So stepping away from the human created world actually gives me a little bit more balance, and I can take on certain challenges where I know I can achieve a certain amount of success, and it's that personal satisfaction, not necessarily winning lots of competitions or making lots of money, because I can't earn from my photography, really. I'm not well enough to do any of the kind of work that you could possibly make a living from. So it's my enjoyment, and hopefully for everybody else's enjoyment. And that gives me back even more pleasure, which is why the communities on Twitter are brilliant, because it's nothing to do with any of the negative things going on. And there's lots of negative, but I've actually got poems and photographs all about it. What do we do as a photographer? We take a negative and we turn it into a positive, and we might turn it back again.
Or in Martin's case, it takes a moon and turns it into a sun.
Done, that's it. Well, Sarah, we're going to have to get you back. It's been fascinating.
Yes, we've got to get you back.
I said to all of you, bring a young lady onto the show, it would be much better. You wouldn't listen to me. So,
Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been a real eye-opener. And I personally have taken an awful lot from it. I hate you for your moon photography, but that's just, don't worry about it. You know, but it's going to make me go out. One day I'm going to get a good photograph of the moon, and it'll be thanks to all of you who've helped me. So, Sarah, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And hopefully you will come back in a few weeks' time, a few months' time, and tell us more of your stories and show us more of your pictures.
I'd love that. Starlings in the winter.
2 metres away, 2 metres apart.
Yeah, 2 metres you tip.
That's it, you got it. We've got the title of the show, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to say a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web, design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is iMen Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got. And they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out.
Right, well, thanks, everyone. What a fascinating show. It's been really interesting to meet and hear from you, Sarah, telling us a life story and your wonderful photographs. Sarah, where can people get hold of you if they want to send you some emails or something like that?
People can get a hold of me probably easiest on Twitter. I'm at Mirador Design, which is MIRADOR Design. Or you can just look up my really unusual surname, Longes, because there aren't many of us.
No.
There are only two Sarah Longes in the whole world.
It doesn't help.
Look up Sarah Longes, you will find me.
Okay. Neil, how do we get hold of you?
You can find me on Instagram on as Dodsy Photo or Dodsy Photo .ch.
Okay, great. Ian?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, great. And last but not least, Damien, how can we get hold of you?
On Twitter, I'm Adamo, and then on, because someone had got Damo on Instagram, I'm Adamo.
Lovely. Okay. And you can get hold of me at martinkelly@mac.com or Magic Man in the Slack room, which we belong to. Sarah, we're going to have to try and drag you into the Slack room. It would be fascinating to get you involved in our little group. So I'm going to say goodnight. Goodnight to everyone here. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Sarah.
Goodnight.
Goodnight. We'll see you all in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you. Bye now.
Thanks, Martin.
Cheers, bye.